Dr. Rose is staying with us. I see our fourth case for this morning is Ronald Wurst against Astru.
Good morning again, Your Honors.
Good morning again, Mr. Rose.
Mr. Wurst advances several arguments. First of all, a Step 3 argument, which, as you already know, Step 3 is the point in the sequential evaluation process where if an individual's condition meets all of the criteria of a specific listing, that person is assumed to be per se disabled. The judge in this particular case mentions listings 1.02 and 1.03. However,
Do you agree that those are the relevant listings? Because I don't know that anything else was called to the judge's attention.
No, I think that those would be the relevant listings. I have no.
We're not saying some other listing out there.
No. That's correct. For example, listing 11, that would be neurological one, immunization.
Okay, 1.02, 1.03. So why isn't the ability to ambulate effectively without the use of an assistive device? And as I understand these listings, it has to be a pretty serious use of an assistive device. Why isn't that? I mean, it's a short phrase, but why isn't it dispositive?
Well, it would be dispositive, Your Honor, had the administrative law judge done any analysis of the record. But Mr. Wurst contends, and I believe correctly, that she didn't do any kind of analysis at all at this particular point. She doesn't say what the listings require, that is, in terms of the musculoskeletal aspect.
He said he could walk up to two to four blocks at one time without the use of a walking aid.
Well, but the if you
so
take...
That's what the ALJ is saying.
Well, she doesn't say it, though.
Well, but why does she... I mean, we can see in the record, this is not a process by which we nitpick the ALJs to death. I mean, if there's evidence in the record that supports what the ALJ says, then that's what the substantial evidence standard requires. Why isn't his testimony that evidence?
Yes, I understand what you're saying. However, if you take into consideration 1.00, and there's a number of other points, it tells you what effective ambulation actually is, and the case of Moss versus Astru also indicates that that's a non-limited listing of elements of what ineffective ambulation consists of.
But if he can walk up to four blocks, why is that an extreme limitation of the ability to walk?
Well,
which is what the regulations talk about.
Well, they say extreme limitation, but it also says...
Why isn't it? I mean, if you can walk four blocks...
Well, but he does more than... He's limited walking four blocks, but he goes to swap meets, for example, and he has to ride in a golf cart.
Well, but you're looking at the glass half empty, and I'm just saying the ALJ is looking at what he can do.
Well, but
he's probably more comfortable riding the golf cart. That's fine. Nobody begrudges him the cart, but it's...
Well, but the listing also indicates in 1.00, it also indicates that effective ambulation means they have to be able to do a variety of normal activities. For example, doing your banking, going to the post office, things of that nature. Now, does walking four blocks include that? Well, she doesn't say. It says, yes, he says he can walk four blocks, but at other points he says he can't. She doesn't analyze anything here. So all she does is make assertions, and I think that this is incorrect. I think she's required, and I referred...
I still don't understand what you mean by analyze, though. She's looking at the evidence in the record. She's drawing an inference from it that his... No one is saying that he's going to go off and run marathons, but, can he manage to walk a reasonable distance without an assistive device? That's a modest standard, and it seems that there's evidence in the record suggesting the answer is yes.
Well, But that's, as I say, that's only one aspect of effective ambulation. There are other aspects of it, too, which she doesn't cover. And it seems that she harms the individual by making simply assertions without any connection between the evidence and her conclusions. This is a...
What's been left out?
Well, she hasn't said what the nature of listing 1.02 requires. The only thing she's going for is effective ambulation, but she doesn't refer to anything in the record here. And moreover, even if he says in his own personal testimony, I can walk four blocks, that doesn't mean that she has connected it to this particular issue.
What reason is there to think she hasn't, though? I mean, she zeroes in on one factor, which alone is enough to knock out these two listings.
Yes.
If you would agree that if she had written a five-page exegesis about his ability to walk and that he can use the leaf blower and that he can, you know, walk four blocks and that he can do whatever other things he's doing, that would be enough, I take it.
Well, if she said so, but she didn't say
well,
so.
Well, that's the inference.
Well, but well, then why don't we just say...
It's a loud and clear inference. He also is crew chief for his son's drag racing team. What does that entail?
Excuse me?
He's also the crew chief. He's a mechanic. He's crew chief for his son's drag racing team. What does that entail?
Well, he tells... his own testimony is that he doesn't do the mechanical work himself. He's no longer able to do that. What he does is he goes in his golf cart and he tells the individuals who are preparing this car, this automobile, for racing as fast as it can in competition to others.
He supervises.
Yes, he's telling them what to do. He doesn't actually do it.
Now he's. One of the things there, I guess, you're complaining about, I didn't focus enough on the obesity. Is that
yes?
And that term is ambiguous as far as I'm concerned. We hear about morbid obesity, and then
yes.
We talk about kids that are obese, and one thing and another. How obese is he?
Well, he was
close. What's his size?
Well, I don't have the exact thing in my head, but
I'm trying to be general terms.
Yes.
Is he way overweight? Where
he's not he's not morbidly obese.
Okay, so
but
he's overweight.
He's obese to the extent that I believe that it would affect his ability to walk. He's got this bilateral neuropathy in his feet, bilateral feet, and that prevents him from walking long distances. In other
what
words,
about the knee?
And the knee as well.
That knee was injured. Is that what the problem
and,
is?
Correct. And he was
a full-fledged mechanic.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he was designated as having the ability to do was be an oil change mechanic, which I guess is pretty basic.
That's what the vocational expert said, that he could do that. However, it would seem that to be an oil change mechanic, you would have to be able to stand. You would have to be able to do light work.
You've got to get down under a car sometimes.
Well,
a pit or something. I don't know.
The new things, they don't lie down and scoot under. They have these pits that they get into and they
stand.
You've
got to climb in and out of it.
They climb in and out, right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Sanchez?
May it please the Court, Alfred Sanchez, appearing on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, Mr. Rose.
Your Honors, I want to address a couple of the points that Mr. Rose mentioned. First off, I want to mention the burdens in this case. Mr. Wirst bears the burden through Step 4 of the sequential evaluation, and that burden includes providing sufficient medical evidence to support his allegations of disability. He also bears the burden of establishing disability prior to the expiration of his insured status. And at step 3, he bears the burden of establishing each and every element of a particular listing. In this case, the ALJ properly identified the relevant listings. She named both of those, and that's not an issue. His issue is whether or not that finding, that step 3 finding, is sufficient. This court has said in Rice that it's proper to read the ALJ's decision as a whole. And as you mentioned, Judge Wood, we don't nitpick the ALJ's decision. We give it a commonsensical reading. And this court has said it would be a formality to do this, a factual analysis of the record at steps 5 and 3, and that it's okay to read the whole record read the entire record as a whole. In this case, I would point to Exhibit A for. Let me go back. The commissioner's regulations define ineffective ambulation as having insufficient lower extremity functioning to permit independent ambulation without the use of a handheld devices that limits the function of both upper extremities. And to give some examples, the inability to walk without the use of a walker, two crutches, or two canes, the inability to walk a block at a reasonable pace or on uneven surfaces. You know, Exhibit A for why the ALJ concluded that Mr. Wirst could ambulate effectively was that she relied on the state agency physician opinion in this record from Dr. Bones, who found that Mr. Works could walk up to 6 hours a day. And
be on his feet 6 hours a day.
Yes, I'm sorry. Be on his feet.
So suppose you're right. Suppose at step 3, where the burden of proof is still on Mr. Wirst, he hasn't satisfied that burden. There's still step 5, which is the place where the burden of proof is on the commissioner. And for step 5, I take it that his RFC is for light work, and yet he does have the diabetes, the knee problems, the balance issues, the standing and bending, and so forth. So talk to me about that, because I some of these jobs that people thought he could do seem to me very ambitious.
Well, the ALJ's RFC finding occurs prior to step 5. And step 5 is
right. I understand where it happens, but
the ALJ in this case, properly reviewed the entire record in determining what functional abilities or limitations Mr. Wirst had as a result of his impairments. The ALJ, discussed, right off the bat, the obesity. She was aware that this was.
And he has these, special shoes. He's got the neuropathy in his feet, which it does cause problems walking. Maybe it doesn't mean that you have to be hanging onto a walker, but it's difficult. And if there are the balance issues, pain issues.
Well, again, I would note that Mr. Wirst bears the burden of establishing the functional limitations resulting from his impairments. And his alleged onset date was July of 2007. His mm-hmm. date last insured was December 2007. So we're dealing with quite a short window. There's 300 pages of medical records spanning four years. However, there's a dearth of medical evidence supporting limitations beyond those found by the ALJ. Rather, the ALJ considered the medical source opinions in the record. She gave greater weight to the opinion of Dr. Bone, who reviewed the entire record. She considered in Mr. Wirst's own testimony that he was walking 3 to 4 blocks. There's no mention, as you know, when claimants file for disability, often they say one thing to the agency, and then at the hearing, it's far more limited. In this case, he didn't say that, I can walk 3 or 4 blocks, but I have to stop every 20 feet to catch my breath, or I need to brace myself to catch something, or I'm using a cane. None of that was included in his testimony. He said, I can sit all day, I can sit 3 to 4 hours at a time, but then I need to stand up. At the hearing, the ALJ in her decision pointed out that he testified that he's looking for light work. Right at the beginning of the hearing, he acknowledges that he's receiving unemployment, indicating that he's, holding himself out as willing and able to work. And he identifies the jobs that he's looking for, the light-duty jobs, as driver and delivery jobs, which would suggest that, he's not using a cane. He's able to walk. While he may not prefer to walk when there's, a cart available, as you mentioned, or, when there's a handrail available, there was sufficient evidence in this record for the ALJ to come to the conclusion that he was able to perform light work. Now, she credited some of his allegations. His past work was medium, and she found that, that he was not able to perform medium work. But he hasn't come forth with any evidence he hasn't provided any objective medical evidence to substantiate limitations beyond those found by the ALJ. And the ALJ properly accommodated those limitations in her residual functional capacity finding and properly put those forth in a hypothetical to the vocational expert who identified a variety of jobs. And it wasn't just...
And he's one of these people who's supposedly approaching advanced age?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
He is.
What's that?
Approaching advanced age would be, under our regulations, would be, I think, age 50 and up to age 55.
Yeah, approaching at age 50, and you've made it at age 55.
I just read that the new 30 is 72. And I'm 71, so I'm really encouraged.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. I would just note that some of the jobs that the VE identified, you know, weren't limited just to the change mechanic. The ALJ also found that, in addition, such an individual could perform hand assembler positions, hand packer positions, sorter positions. So there was other work beyond those mechanic jobs that she found Mr. Wirst could perform.
Now, originally he was at his own mechanic business, right?
Correct. I believe he owned his own shop.
He had a lot of capacity and talent. Now, as he's diminished in his physical ability, he apparently has skills.
Right, and the vocational expert did find, and the ALJ did find, that there were transferable skills as a result of the experience that he had building or rebuilding hot rods. And that was something that the vocational expert testified about and that the ALJ was aware about at the hearing. And that would be something that would come into consideration, particularly if the administrative law judge were to apply the grids. But in this case, the ALJ didn't find that Mr. Wirst could perform in the full range of light work.
Right. So they go off the grids.
He went off the grids and properly got VE testimony. I'd be happy to address any of the other points raised by Mr. Wirst if you have any questions. Otherwise, I'm going
to... Apparently not. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Rose?
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to point out that with regard to Mr. Wirth's obesity, the ALJ did find at step two that his obesity was severe, but she didn't take that into consideration. And severe, according to Social Security, means that it significantly limits your ability to work. But she didn't take that into consideration. And, of course, obesity would affect his knee and his feet and his ability to stand for all these length of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.